Good evening. You're listening to the Parliament Arts Podcast, episode 15. Looking forward. Welcome back, everyone, to the Parliament of Arts Podcast. I'm your host, Thomas Lanise.
And this is his wife, Melanie Lanise.
So we made it. It is part three of Zatanna's Search, the epic conclusion of our very first story arc. Wasn't so bad, was it?
No, not at all. It was a lot easier than what I thought. It was easier to follow the track of the arc.
As opposed to like the one-off stories we had been doing?
Yeah, and all the characters, like they had enough development. It was engaging all the way through.
Yeah. Well, in the interest of, complete visibility for our listenership, we probably should note that offline, similar to what we did last week, regarding Hal Jordan, how we took a look at the New Frontier cartoon to sort of give you a background in his origin. For the benefit of everybody, we did something similar for Zatanna this past week, offline. Mel and I sat down and, showed her a bit of alternate media in the form of Batman the Animated Series, specifically the Zatanna episode, the eponymously titled Zatanna.
So
I know that was your first exposure to Batman in that format. What did you think of the animated series? That's sort of a late 80s classic. How'd you feel about that?
It looked great. It kind of had like a darker kind of feel to it. And there was only really one thing that kind of stuck out to me.
What's that?
Like that, the story that we watched, I wasn't really sure how old Zatanna was supposed to be.
Yeah, so, okay, like Batman Animated Series, doesn't follow a strict continuity with regard to the comics we're reading. We've talked before about, sort of like universes or whatever. There's a DC animated universe. So like, the Batman Animated Series we saw is sort of a shared storytelling with things like, Justice League Unlimited, or, like there was a show called like Static Shock, about a, sort of inner city hero or whatever. But they all sort of exist in the same universe, which is apart from what we're reading in the comics. So in that story, I would have said like in the flashbacks, I guess, with Zatara, she was probably like late teenager or whatever, sort of like, starry eyed or whatever. And then later on, probably, like mid 20s maybe, right? Because Bruce Wayne had gone off and trained to become Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from the narrative, what you said, you liked the way it looked, what do you think of that sort of gothic styling and all that?
I love that kind of stuff. It reminded me of some old school animation. And it sounded right, too. Like, nothing stuck out.
What do you mean? Like, the voices and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that particular show is really known for its voice acting. The guy who does Batman is a dude, Kevin Conroy, who, obviously everybody's got their own ideal Batman. For some people it's like Adam West or, like Michael Keaton or whatever. But Kevin Conroy, even for just being a voice actor, is pretty much heralded in the fan community as being, one of the best people to portray Batman. And then, for the benefit of our listeners, whatever, we actually did watch a second episode. Melanie's expressed fondness in the past for Harley Quinn. So we watched Mad Love. And just back to the point about voice acting, you may not know this, but the guy who did the Joker in that is actually Mark Hamill. The guy who did Luke Skywalker.
Oh. Wow. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So cool. And one other thing, since we're, sort of drawing back the curtain a little bit, that we should probably make note of is during last episode, I mentioned that, I was sort of renewing my fondness for, the Elongated Man, which, by the way, just a little quick note. Yes, I did on the playback. If anybody noticed, I noticed too, it's a verbal tic. I know it's Elongated Man, not Elongated Man, but for some reason, my mouth just keeps saying that. So if I misspeak or whatever, just give me the benefit of the doubt. I know how it's properly pronounced. but I was saying that, because we read that story, I was going to go out, visit the comic shop again and maybe pick up the showcase volume. So I did go to the shop and, brought Melanie in tow. You've been to a comic shop a couple times, like in our relationship, but I think this time you sort of had a unique perspective, after having done the show for a few months. How was that experience like different for you going in this time?
So yeah, I have been in comic shops before, and they've never really made a lot of sense to me. I used to like just kind of walk around and pick up shiny things, and, flip through the clothes, and kind of like not stalking you, but, definitely keeping you and, going like, when is he done yet? but this time I walked in and you pointed out some of the, some of the titles that we've done and kind of explained why things need to be separated out by publisher.
Oh, right. Yeah, there's like a DC section, like a Marvel section or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, because that's when we talked about the whole concept of like universes, right? You know, like there's the DC universe where all these characters that we are discussing interact, but then they don't interact really with Spider-Man and Captain America because that's like a different, that's the Marvel universe and so on and so forth.
Right.
Yeah. So, but you said some of the stuff that that we had talked about. Well, just for my own edification, what caught your eye? I know they had some of the classic stuff there pinned up on the wall. Does anything jump out at you that you remember?
Probably Fate. Probably I would say Fate the most.
Dr. Fate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that helmet.
And then I did see a couple issues of the old Spectre series. I know we haven't read that yet, but we've seen some of the advertisements. So I was this close to actually picking up one of those classic Neil Adams covers, Spectres, but we'll hold off on that.
I'm looking forward to reading Spectre.
Yeah, it's going to be very cool. But what we're reading tonight is the final chapter in the Zatanna story. It is a story called Z, as in Zatanna, and Zero Hour. And this brings everything together, like I said last episode, in Justice League, number 51, from February of 1967. This is another Gardner Fox pen story with pencils by Mike Sikowski, inks by his new partner here, Sid Green, and letters by Gaspar Saladino. Cover is, again, Mike Sikowski, with inks this time by one of my favorite inkers, Joe Giella. I think I mentioned I like him paired up with Carmine Infantino.
Mm-hmm.
Colors unknown and letters internally by Ira Schnapp. So let's go ahead and take a look at that cover. So what we see is basically, you know, our heroine Zatanna sort of being, you know, engulfed by flames. And it looks as though several members of our Justice League are battling her. You know, Batman has her, you know, by the forearm and... you know, Adam, it looks like he's swinging an axe at her, and Elongated Man, not Elongated, is, you know, holding Batman back. As, you know, the narration here reads, Batman leads the Justice Leaguers on the greatest manhunt of all time, Z, as in Zatanna, and Zero Hour, with surprise guest star, the Elongated Man. With surprise guest star, the Elongated Man. And then we see the art signed by Sikowski and Giella. So let's go ahead and open this. I really got to pay attention to that. So we see our first page here, you know, with a splash panel, you know, with Zatanna being borne down on by, you know, a horde of, you know, what looked to be, you know, demons and beasts and such. As our narration reads, for most of her young life, Zatanna has been hunting on Earth as well as on dimensional and magical worlds for her missing magician father, Zatara. Now at last, she discovers where he is, only to become, when she goes there, the target of awesome magical forces that threaten her very life. Z, as in Zatanna, and Zero Hour. That's a very awkward title.
Yeah.
I don't like that at all. But let me see our roll call. Adam, Batman, Green Lantern, Hawkman, and guest starring Elongated Man. You know, we see sort of inset with, you know, Ralph stretching his arm across the panel. So we begin in Justice League headquarters. Empty, save for a crystal ball, Merlin's no doubt, from which backward words are magically spoken. I nomus nir gnaretnal, I lach no mota dna namtab, namqua dna et detagnol nam, which means, go ahead.
I think it means you're a namtwag. I summon Green Lantern, I call on Adam and Batman, Hawkman and the Elongated Man.
Elongated. Did you say that?
Did I?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now we're both second-guessing ourselves. So in any case, in response to the irresistible commands, we see that motley crew appear. You know, Green Lantern's like, what brought me here? Hawkman's like, there was no emergency signal. Adam, did you feel the same thing I did? If you mean that momentary dizziness, says Adam, I sure did. It isn't time for a regular meeting either, says Batman. What are we all doing here? That's what I'd like to know. I, the Elongated Man, am not even a member of the JLA, says Ralph very expositorily.
Yes, that was a little awkward.
So in a puff, you know, we see Zatanna appear, saying, I brought you all here personally to thank you for helping me find my father, Zatara. There's some mistake, says Hawkman. Some of us at one time or another helped Zatanna look for her father, but we failed, finishes Green Lantern. Swiftly, the Maid of Magic, who spent most of her life searching for her long-lost father, grows and grows until, oh, she must have been tiny and then she's growing to full size.
That's just being coy.
You failed the first time, says Zatanna, but on the second attempt, you succeeded gloriously. We did? Says the Atom. If you're including me, Zatanna, says Batman, I have no recollection of even meeting you, let alone helping you. Oh, but you did, darling, she says, you know, giving Batman and Green Lantern a squeeze as they both, you know, sort of blush. All five of you, and I thank you so much. Believe me, I never would have found Daddy without your superheroic help, or even been alive to tell you about it. Hold it, Zatanna, says Batman. What do you know that we don't? All I recall is saving your life in China, says Hawkman. Well, I accompanied you to the land of the Druid, says the Atom, and I helped you fight the Warlock in Dis, which he obviously is misspelled. He's a Warlock of Ease. And I happened to meet you once in a theatrical prop shop, says Elongated Man. Well, I have never had the pleasure of meeting you until now. And then off to the side, you know, we see the editor's notes, right, where all these stories are Hawkman 4, Adam 19, Green Lantern 42, and Detective 355, all of which we have read. You're mystified, recounts Zatanna, as you have a right to be, but listen to my story. My cryptic statements will become clear. As you all know, I've been hunting for my father Zatara ever since he mysteriously vanished from Earth. Some months ago, in an antique shop in Vienna, let me see, you know, Zatanna's flashback, and she's looking at the Sword of Paracelsus. Will this be the clue that will lead me to my father? Paracelsus, continues Zatanna, was a physician of the Middle Ages who dabbled in black magic. Finding his sword was marvelous, but even more marvelous was the discovery that, as we see her thinking, I sense an emanation from the sword, my father's personal aura. Yes, he's been in contact with this weapon. Drows let em tor oi wonk fo aratas, which means,
sword, tell me what you know of Zatara.
And in response, the hilt of the sword begins shimmering, and we see a female face appear, saying, Zatara used this blade when he fought his last and greatest foe, the one who doomed him to roam forever away from Earth. I am Allura, an elemental who lives in the sword, which serves as a host body to shelter me. If you release me, you could act as my host, and I would be able to take you to your father. What must I do? Asked Zatanna. Yeah, I know. Don't believe her, Zatanna. It's a trick. So, according to Allura, I needed the book, the I Ching, and the Ting tripod to make the incantation that would safely allow her to leave the sword. In securing these, I came in contact with the Elongated Man.
Wait, isn't the I Ching, don't they consider that black magic
yet? Right, well, exactly, yeah. That's the story we read last time. So, coincidentally enough, last Halloween Eve, I performed the special spell. You see, you know, Zatanna there, you know, with the I Ching and the, you know, the Ting tripod. And sure enough, you know, we see Allura, you know, arising from the sword in a cloud of smoke. I'm now in gaseous form, Zatanna. Breathe me into your body.
Yeah, do that.
So instantly, Zatanna feels the presence of the elemental inside her. The walls of the room receding and, as we see, you know, Zatanna start tripping out. You know, basically the room fades into sort of, you know, like this geometrical patterns and such, you know, as the book flies away from her and she's like floating in air. Yeah. I'm taking you to the land of karma, says, you know, Allura from inside her head, the last refuge of Zatara. And just for a note for our folks, karma is not spelled in the traditional way. It's spelled as sort of K-H, so Kaharma.
Right. They put the harm in Kaharma.
So scarcely had Zatanna's feet touched the ground of Kaharma, then a friendly reception committee, she says ironically, as the horde of demons we saw comes bounding over the hill. No, they're the evil beastmen of Belphegor, says Allura from inside her. Quickly, Zatanna, fight them with your magic.
How weird must it be to hear somebody's voice talking to you from within your own head?
I know. But weird though it may be, Zatanna decides to, you know, follow Allura's guidance and cast a spell. Sirt, Pyrg, Eem, Siof. I'm getting better at backward reading. Skor, Retab, Met, which means what?
Trees grip my foes. Rocks batter them.
Yes.
Wow.
So in a magical split second, the trees, you know, grip her foes and the rocks begin battering them. And momentarily overcome by surprise, those terrible animal creatures quickly fight back. As Zatanna conjures up some more stuff. Deniriel, Worlb, Yawa, Esot, Stabe, which means what?
Whirlwind, blow away those beasts.
And the whirlwind does, but unknown to Zatanna at this moment of danger, elsewhere on this world, magical fingers were weaving necromantic spells against her. As we see, you know, a pair of hands sort of casting a spell over a little sigil, like sort of like dragon enclosed in a, you know, triangle with little, you know, serpents wandering around it. as the owner of the hands is thinking, I must stop Zatanna in her quest, or all is lost. Let's turn the page. As now, as a result of that added conjuration, we see the beasts caught up in that whirlwind, but they're breaking through. As one of the beasts is sort of like, you know, a bull creature, I guess, you know, with bells hanging from his horns, and the bells are like bonging really loud. They're breaking through, says the voice of Allura in Zatanna's head. Zatanna, those awesome bell sounds are stabbing through you, weakening me. If I get too weak, you'll have to leave this land, do something else. But what, says Zatanna. And it was then, continues Zatanna, and she's recounting this tale to the JLA, that I thought of Hawkman and Atom and Green Lantern. And, you see her thinking, those superheroes helped me once, why not again? I've been in contact with them, so I have magical rapport with them. Muta, Namqua, Nirgnretnal, Repie Dna Gnifrof M, which means what?
Atom, Hawkman, Green Lantern, and... Wait a minute, Green Lantern, appear and fight for me.
Right. And so they do, as we see, Green Lantern, sling his ring. But, huh? My power ring doesn't work. I'll handle this cowboy's nightmare, says Atom, jumping off Green Lantern's shoulder toward the bull creature. Hit him in time, so he merely brushed Zatanna aside, says Atom, as he smacks the bull man away. Great Guardians, says Hal. In desperation, I directed my power ring at those other bullmen, and this time it worked. As, his power ring makes two energy construct fists to batter off, two other minotaurs. Oh, it was so good to see you fellows, recounts Zatanna, continuing her recollection of the JLA. To do your stuff on those creatures. You, for instance, Hawkman, she describes Hawkman soaring to the air, grabbing, some sort of beastie by the tail and, smacking them together with a thump. Back and forth, recounts Zatanna, that fight raged as you struggled and strained to down those magically aided beast beings. The air was filled with the sound of combat while I tried as best I could to help you.
That's a nice panel, don't you think?
Yeah, well, so it's a big splash panel, right, with Zatanna there in the middle of the battle, with her JLA friends, knocking out the beasts as she herself is conjuring a spell. Yam et dug... Stirrups dia oi, which means what?
May the good spirits aid you.
I don't know that that's much of a spell, but as they, continue to fight, apparently aided by these good spirits, Zatanna remembers, oh, you took some savage blows in return. For one long, breathless moment, I became terror-stricken as you reeled back from the overwhelming onslaught. Ah, but you responded, as only you truly wonderful heroes can. You scorned your hurts. You fought back with savage intensity. She's really, really wistful for this battle. As, at the end, we see Zatanna in flashback, proclaiming, you've triumphed. Oh, what a wonderful inspiration it was to cause you magical counterparts of the real Hawkman, Green Lantern, and Atom to come here. You're also exactly like the original superheroes. I couldn't tell the difference if I didn't know.
What?
So she created these guys as magical versions of, these aren't the real heroes, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so let's turn the page. And, she directs these, simulcrums or whatever you say, these sort of like fake heroes. Come now, we must find Zatara. With you superheroes alongside me, I shall not fail. But secretly, ahead of us, was Zatara himself. But as Zatara, I might not have recognized had I seen him then, for he was making magic to be used against me, his own daughter. As, finally, we see Zatara, the object of her quest, and he's standing there, in magician pose, hands outstretched, cloaked in a, veil of smoke, saying, I must defeat Zatanna in her attempt to reach me. If I fail, I must not permit myself to think of that disaster. Why is Zatara fighting the daughter he loves? Asks the narration. What strange motivation could possess him to hurl the mighty magic which he is the master of as his own flesh and blood? Story continues on the second page following, following apparently the half-page ad for, Safety at Christmas Time by a very famous sort of cartoon artist here, Henry Boltonoff. He does all these like sort of little gag strips and also the Caps Hobby hints that we saw a couple times, where the old man shows the kids that do models. Yeah, so... Henry Boltonoff is, doing a little ad. They do decorating a Christmas tree, but do it cool, he warns. Be extra careful when you decorate that Christmas tree, or you might wind up like this fellow, falling off the top step of a ladder. DC needs you to have a durable Christmas and a happy new year.
See, now I know what DC stands for.
Right, durable Christmas, yes. Durable Christmas comics. So, Z as in Zatanna and Zero Hour, part 2. From the realm of shade and shadow, Zatara summoned up his ancient enemy, Amenhotep, necromancer from the land of the Nile, evil Egyptian wizard whom long ago Zatara defeated. As we see, sort of nice half page here, Zatara striking a magical pose, summoning, Amenhotep, from a candlelit, occult place. I don't know. Like he's got little glyphs and stuff on the back wall. And Zatara saying, just as my daughter fashioned up her Justice League superhero friends to help her, so shall I draw assistance from an old foe. And, Amen appears there in the smoke. Amenhotep wakes from his long sleep. He stirs. Then he comes in answer to your call, O mighty Zatara. He sounds a lot like Dr. Fate.
Yeah.
And they're both Egyptians. So Zatara says,
God, that's a lot.
Yeah, in backwards speak, Og Hrot Ot Od Hwat Tsum Eb Idon Ot Hatal Anataz. Or you're in Tanicknock. I don't know. I'm just making this up. Stem crap. Slack Eb Roy.
It does say crap.
Snoppio. But backwards it doesn't. Because what does it read in the correct way?
I don't know. Go forth to do what must be done to halt Zatanna, your ancient parchments shall be your weapons.
Yes, parchment backwards is apparently stem crap.
Stem crap.
I hear you, Zatara, and shall obey, says Amenhotep. As on the next page, we see Amen, grown to gargantuan size.
He's basically huge.
He towers
over mountains.
20 times the size of a normal person. So as we advanced, the sky suddenly darkened, and the super gigantic figure of the magical Amenhotep appeared. What manner of menace is this threatening us now? Says Zatanna. If his size is meant to panic us, says fake Green Lantern, we'll show him up as a big nothing, says fake Hawkman. So with a rustle of ancient yellowed parchment, Amenhotep shook out his scrolls. Figures painted, figures real, figures from this parchment steel. Fight these three, your brand new foes. Bring them loss and bring them woes. With a vicious face, Amenhotep chants out this rhyming spell. So with bated breath, Zatanna stares at these awesome new opponents. Living chariots, winged baz. What's a baz? I'm not sure. Maybe an Egyptian hawk or something.
Yes, I think so. Yes. With the face on it, right. Like a people face.
So soldiers of the pharaoh, jackals, all armed in mystic might of ancient Egypt, land of wizardry, were arrayed against us. I'll handle that chariot, says Hawkman, bounding to the sky. You all right, Zatanna? He says, grabbing the winged horses from the chariot and pulling them down. Couldn't be better, thanks to your heroics, Hawkman.
She's all smiling.
Yes. Up above our heads, Green Lantern was doing battle with a winged baa. Incorrect, you are. It's a faced hawk. Apparently helpless because, now what? He says, fake Green Lantern, my ring's not working. But that thing is invulnerable to it. All right, if it's back to the punch board, so be it. As, fake Hal gives a bloop, big punch right to the jaw. That'll take the bite out of him. Well, you, Adam, recounts Zatanna, flitted about everywhere like an angry hornet, making yourself light,
like
heavy,
hornet.
Light, heavy, until the clicks of your size and weight controls filled the air. Whap, click, Zako, click, whoop. Oh, because he's clicking his size and weight controls.
Yeah, exactly.
So we continue as more and more of these painted adversaries tumble from the parchments as Amenhotep shook them out, until I feared their very numbers would overwhelm you. How long can this go on? Says Zatanna. Not much longer, says Allura from her head. Your heroes are about to cave under. To make matters worse, Amenhotep now hurled some of those very parchments down at me, says Zatanna. They flew like eerie birds, their papyrus sheets flapping like wings. Zatanna, save yourself, says Allura from her mind. Save me, I'm getting weaker and weaker as the parchment wraps around you. But what can I do, Allura? If only I could reach out and rip those evil parchments from that Egyptian wizard, I'd... Oh, reach out, of course! I'd been in contact with Elongated Man at a theatrical prop shop, and with Batman in Gotham City, so... Detganol Nob Dana Namtab Emok Ot M. Which means what?
Elongated Man and Batman come to me.
Right. So at this critical moment, the sharp voice of Batman, okay, so in present day, right, as she's doing this little flashback, the critical voice of Batman cuts across Zatanna's enthralling narrative. Hold it right there, Zatanna, says Batman. You and I have never been near each other until today, let alone in contact. Oh, yes, we have, Batman, says Zatanna. Do you recall the adventure you had with the witch who served the outsider? And we see a little note here. Detective Comics number 336, Batman's Bewitched Nightmare. And we are going to pause in our narrative here for what may be the longest aside I think I've ever had to give in a story just to explain why the heck Batman is in this story. Okay, so are you ready for this?
I'm a little apprehensive, but...
it's going to be a long one. So it all starts with the idea that Batman, you know, as a character, historically has been, you know, very sort of adaptable to different takes. You know, there's the basic premise, you know, rich playboy, crime fighter dude, you know, goes out there, you know, sort of dark creature of the night. Mm-hmm. But within that, you know, framework, you know, there's different things that can be done with it. Sometimes you can make him very much the detective. Sometimes you can make him, you know, very much, you know, the team player like he would be in JLA. Sometimes it inspires, you know, like campy takes, you know, like, you know, sort of like Adam West Batman. Mm-hmm. So different types of things can be, you know, put onto that base template. In the 1950s, you know, as we have talked about, one of the things that were very, very popular in, you know, comic books was the whole idea of sci-fi. A lot of those pulp writers had, you know, come across to DC, and the reinventions of, you know, standard Golden Age characters were redone in sort of like sci-fi mode, you know, like Barry Allen's now mm-hmm. police scientist, and Hal Jordan is, you know, with aliens or whatever. Sci-fi was very much all the rage. So they attempted, you know, against the protestations of you know, the Batman editors at the time, to start to overlay some sci-fi elements into Batman stories. Like, you know, he met a professor who, through this type of, like, hypnosis thing or whatever, could send Batman back in time. Like, so Batman would, like, have adventures.
That's convenient.
Yeah, yeah, like, with, you know, King Arthur, you know, he would have adventures in like, yeah, ancient Egyptian days. This is a ridiculous, like, time travel Batman. Other things would send Batman to alien planets, you know, where he would, it's just like, you know, like, and he, I see you're scoffing or whatever, right? It just, it doesn't seem to fit. And like I say, you know, the editor at the time, Jack Schiff, you know, even said as much. He's like, this character's just not that. They're like, no, sci-fi sells. So Jack Schiff, you know, sucked it up and said, all right, fine, let's do it. The unfortunate side of it was that sci-fi didn't sell with relation to Batman.
Yeah.
Year after year, the...
it sounded like a stretch.
Yeah, the sales numbers just kept plummeting, you know, like for both Batman comics and then also Detective Comics. And they got so low, in fact, that they were literally, there was discussions inside the DC office of actually canceling Detective Comics. Now, do you know what DC stands for?
Is it Detective Comics?
It's Detective Comics. So you know it's got to be pretty bad if they were, like, you know, this close to canceling their very namesake title, you know. So, but, like, as a last-ditch effort, they said, you know what, it's obvious, you know, what the problem here. The problem is Jack Schiff. The editor has lost control of whatever. We need to replace him, which is ironic.
And did they?
Well, but no, but the ironic thing is that he's the guy who originally said, no, you shouldn't do this. And now they're like, well, we did, you know, we did this or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, but the irony goes even further. They're like, you know what? We're going to replace him with a popular editor, somebody whose books are selling, that being Julia Schwartz, the editor of JLA, the editor of, you know, Flash, Green Lantern, basically all the sci-fi titles. They're like, you know what? Sci-fi editor, go take over Detective Comics and remove all the sci-fi. So,
wow.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
So it was really wacky. But, you know, to his credit, Julia Schwartz, you know, knows, you know, like, apart from being, like, you know, a sci-fi buff, was also a very, very good editor. He knew what worked and didn't, and that was basically, you know, why they were giving it to him. And what was going to work, you know, in this particular case, you know, in the mind of Julia Schwartz, is basically bringing Batman, you know, back to the basics. You know, he's like, at his core, he is a detective. You know, he headlines Detective Comics. We need to get rid of all these extraneous elements and, like, just get him back to the basics. So starting in Detective Comics number 327, which, interestingly, is the 300th anniversary of Batman's first appearance in Detective Comics 27, you know, 300 issues later, Julia Schwartz takes the editorial reins and introduces what will come to be known as the New Look Batman.
And what was that?
Well, funny you should ask. So the New Look Batman, basically, like I say, you know, is getting rid of a lot of these extraneous things. First things first, he got rid of a lot of the costume villains. You know, some of the things that we would think as just, you know, part and parcel of the Batman mythos. You know, Joker, Penguin, you know, Riddler, that type thing. He's like, you know what? Let's get rid of all that. You know, let's get rid of... you know, some of the fanciful elements in Batman. So, like, oh gosh, we'll get to this or whatever at some point. But somewhere along the line, Batman had picked up a little interdimensional sprite named Batmite. He's this little, like, you know, like Great Gazoo from like the Flintstones. Oh, he was okay. Like that. He's like, hey, Batman, you know, crazy little guy dressed in a Batman costume that would like, he's like, get rid of that. We're never going to mention that again. At the time, there was a female pair, Batwoman and Batgirl, not the Batgirl that we know, but just, you know, sort of a gaudily colored, you know, pair or whatever. Julie said, you know, swipe that, you know, we're never going to talk about them again. Ace the Bat-Hound, I know that you know. He's like,
I think I got you that comic. A while ago.
Yeah, you bought me the first appearance of Ace the Bat-Hound as like a birthday gift one time. But Julie said, no, that's silliness and whatever.
Sorry.
And yes, I got rid of that. And then really sort of interjected a lot more, like I say, detective elements, really, you know, back to basics. You know, we're going to put a mystery here, but put clues throughout the stories. You, the reader, try to solve it. You know, but Batman's going to do it better, that type thing. One of the other things that he decided to get rid of wasn't necessarily a... sci-fi element to Batman stories, but an element that had always sort of been a cultural thorn in the side of the Batman story. So Batman, you know, Bruce Wayne, a rich playboy, adopts this boy, you know, Dick Grayson, whatever, to come live with him, and then they have this, you know, this English manservant, Alfred. So basically, you have these three single men, you know, living in a thing, and, you know, in the post-Wortham days, you know, there was always that sort of, like, in-joke, well, okay, obviously, you know, this is a gay household, da-da-da-da-da. So in order to nip that in the bud, you know, Julie said, we're going to get rid of Alfred, you know, the butler, and introduce a female presence. And so what he did was he brought in Dick Grayson and Robin's, like, long-lost aunt Harriet.
Oh, yes, because, of course, she was missing.
Right, yeah, exactly, to bring a female presence into the house. But then, additionally, in the next issue, you know, I say a new look kicked off in 327, and the very next month in 328, there's a story where, you know, in order to remove Alfred from the equation, Alfred gets word that there's going to be a, you know, like a death trap set for Batman and Robin. So he races down to this construction site where they're, and like he sees this, you know, crane swinging like a boulder about to drop it. And so he runs up to the scene and pushes Batman and Robin out, and the boulder kills Alfred. Basically lands on him, and Alfred gets killed.
Wow.
So, yeah, and so that's the end of that particular element in the Batman stories. All right.
And unlike superheroes, he's actually dead.
Well, so that's the next thing that we're going to talk about. So right on the heels of this, you know, like I say, he got rid of all the, you know, costume villains. But what he, you know, what they began introducing into these stories is a sort of long-term plot where there is a master villain that's pulling a lot of strings. Like Batman will fight these one-off type people, you know, like he meets a guy named the Grasshopper, and then another story he meets like this like witch thing, and he defeats these little people, but at the end of it, you know, through like a little radio or whatever, he hears a voice coming from this criminal mastermind who's known as the Outsider. And like I said, this plot, you know, basically runs through the Batman books, Detective and Batman, for several years. You know, the new look, you know, kicked off in I believe like May of 64, and you know, for several years you never even saw the Outsider. Like I say, he was just sort of, you know, behind the scenes, you know, pulling the strings. Well, in the midst of this, you know, concurrent to this ongoing plot, you know, apart from comics, there was another negotiation going on inside of DC Comics, you know, with a television producer, specifically who was trying to, you know, spin off one of their characters into, you know, a TV show. And the character that he had targeted was Batman.
Hmm.
You know, like I said, as we've talked about a couple times on this program, and as, you know, anyone who's at all familiar with, you know, American culture in the 60s knows, you know, the Batman TV show was a huge phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that was, like I say, the initial negotiations were going on at the time of New Look Batman. The Batman TV show first debuted in January of 1966, and... you know, on that very first episode, guess who's there present in the Bruce Wayne household?
Alfred,
exactly. Right, so...
definitely not dead.
He was definitely not dead, right. Contrary to the stories going on in comics. And at first, there's nothing big. You know, you can have alternate continuities, you know, different things going on. But once the, you know, Batmania phenomena took off, you know, people who were like, oh, Batman, I'm totally into it now, I'm going to read comics... want the comics to look like what they're seeing on TV.
So they had to resurrect Alfred.
They had to resurrect Alfred. And the way in which they did that, you know, is sort of like tricky, you know, and like I say, Julie, you know, has a lot of sci-fi background. He sort of pulled a little sci-fi plot. What he claimed happened was that Alfred, you know, when he was hit by that boulder, wasn't quite dead. There was still like a spark of life in him.
We can rebuild him.
Yeah. And a crazy, you know, sort of like mad scientist or whatever took him back to, his thing or whatever, and did some experiments, and it's very complex. Not sure that I remember the finer details of this, but something happens whereby the consciousness of Alfred and this scientist are swapped. This guy's mind in the dead Alfred body, converts into this almost monster looking thing called the Outsider. Alfred's mind goes into this guy, but whose body changes to look like Alfred used to look like, and whatever. Long story short,
I'm wincing.
Yeah. So the inside story of the Outsider, they called it, from October 66. But long story short, once that was over, they never talked about it again. Alfred was just the butler
and
everything's back to normal. Yeah. So all of that, is the background behind the story that Zatanna was talking about. Remember I said, the Outsider would send, these various, sub-criminals to go against him. Well, one of them happened to be a witch, all right? Not a big deal.
Like Zatanna witch?
Well, okay, but that's the thing, right? So Zatanna's story that we've been following, there was no mention of Batman whatsoever. But this JLA story that we're taking a look at is right in the middle of Batmania. And DC Comics at the time is like, look, any comic that Batman appears in, we need to push him. He's got to be important. So, of course, Detective, of course, Batman, world's finest. The team up with, Superman. Batman was more future than that. Brave and the Bold, which up to that point had been a team up book with various heroes, at that point became exclusively Batman team ups. But then, more importantly, JLA, where he was just a member, suddenly he was on every single cover, first and foremost, and in the story was a prime mover and shaker. The Zatanna story, which, had been playing out for a while, they're like, well, you got to throw Batman in it. And, Gardner Fox is like, well, how am I going to do that? And so they went back and looked at those Outsider stories. They're like, oh, okay, well, in that particular one, he fought a witch. Well, Zatanna's kind of a witch. Let's say that the Outsider put a spell on Zatanna, made her look different, and she fought Batman, and that was the time he met her, and now Batman can be in the story.
Wow.
Yeah, so like I said, the longest possible aside that we could do, and now you understand why Batman is in this story.
And why he hadn't been mentioned before.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, back to our story. Which picks up right at that point. I was that witch, says Zatanna, and here's a little, shot from that story, right? I'd come to Gotham City disguised as an old woman, hoping that the mysterious Outsider might have a clue to my father's whereabouts. Why she would think that, let's just ignore that. It was I who, by my magic, placed the thought in Robin's head that by grabbing my broomstick, he might overpower me. Apparently that's the way they defeated her. The Outsider's compelling me to obey him, says Batman. Amazing, says Batman in present day. I never could have suspected. Neither did anyone else, dude. So you see, says Zatanna, I did establish enough contact with you, thus enabling me to summon your magical counterpart to aid me in my zero hour.
Don't question this one, kiddies.
Right. So now we go back into flashback as, in response to my call, Batman, you turn the tide. I'm stronger, thinks Zatanna, now that the papyrus sheets are releasing me. As did Elongated Man by stretching his arms up to come to grips with Amenhotep. As we see, Elongated Man, stretching his arm, skyward. Like I say, Amenhotep's like 20 stories tall, and so he zwaps him in the face,
with a
crawl. Yeah, well, yeah, so it's almost evocative of a Gil Kane money shot, right? It's sort of backwards. maybe they were, pooling some, tips among the art pool there. So we turn the page to another full-page splash as the battle rages on. Bashing knuckles, slamming body blocks, uppercuts to the jaw, hooks to the chins. We're taking their dreadful toll as we see, a massive, battle scene here with the fake Adam, Hawkman, Batman, Green Lantern, and Elongated Man just, making short work of Amenhotep's, cronies. The world's greatest hero, says Zatanna. No doubt about that.
She's completely ignoring everything going on around her.
Well, this is all her work, really. I mean, like, everything that's happening is because of her spell. I mean, maybe she's concentrating to hold it all together. So suddenly, Batman, quote-unquote, who thinks even while his fist is getting in its awesome work, cries out sharply, "Hold it, everyone! I just thought of something," he says, not pausing in his crack across the guy's chin. "Break it up. No more fighting. We have this all wrong," says fake Batman. "Nobody's trying to harm Zatanna." "Hey, Green Lantern, give me a hand with the Cape Crusader. He's flipped his face mask," says Hawkman. "Let go of me," says Batman as, his fellow fake JLA members are holding him tight. "I'm okay, I tell you. I've just tumbled under the truth. We must let those Egyptian magic men capture Zatanna." it's been too much of a strain for Batman, they say, you know, like, thinking that he's cracking up. Poor fellow, says Green Lantern. And he was always so smart, too. I almost envied him, that keen analytical mind of his. Hear me out, will you? Says Batman to these completely unreasonable fake teammates. You remember the bells on that Bullman's Zatanna told us about? Sure, we remember that, Batman. The parchments that came in contact with Zatanna, which I ripped off? Then keeping in mind those bullhorns and the parchments, or book, take a look at what passes for the sun of this magical world. We turn the page. Was it a six-sided sun? Let's see. Maybe Rahman's in this. Hold on. But no. What it is a candle, a magical one that gives this land of Kaharma heat and light. Bell? Book? Candle? Says Hawkman. The rite by which demons are exorcised out of a person's body. There must be a demon inside of Zatanna, says the Atom. Not having heard your discussion, you know, recounts Zatanna, I thought at the time, help, why are you abandoning me? As, you know, they stop helping her, you know, and Amenhotep's folks grab her. I sure hope you're right, Batman, says Elongated Man. You will be, if they bring her to that candle, says Green Lantern. And if you're wrong, we've doomed Zatanna, says Hawkman. Is Batman correct in his deductions? Asks the narration. Has his trained mind arrived at the right answers, or the wrong one? Story continues on the third page following. We end on a half-page ad here, and oh, and like
for a Batman team up.
Right, exactly. I was saying Brave and the Bold. This one, actually, I have this one. Batman vs. Hawkman. This is actually a pretty good one. There's a dude called the Collector, and what he collects is people's secret identities, and so he's targeted Batman and Hawkman to learn who they are. And they sort of like spoilers for anybody who's ever going to find this Brave and the Bold team up. But these two trick him into thinking that he's learned their secret identities, but they're actually completely fake. Like, he makes the dude think that Carter Hall is actually Batman, and that Hawkman is like a Martian alien. Like, he pulls off his thing or whatever, and he's got this big green weird face or whatever. And so, but the Collector goes off super happy. He's like, I know their identities. I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm going to collect them. You know, I often wish that they had followed that up, you know, with like different crossovers and things, like Collector goes and gets Superman or whatever. But yeah. But now that never happened.
That sounds fun.
And let's see. And then on the facing page, we have the JLA mailroom. Let's just do a quick thing. Oh, you know who that is? There's a letter here by a guy named Don Markstein, who used to run a website that, oh my gosh, I used to love about 10 years ago, called the Toonipedia. He was just a dude. He used to work for Disney for a time, doing like some of the Donald Duck comic books. But then in his later years, he just he ran a really basic website, just, you know, really basic HTML. And every week he would publish another article about a comic book character. Like, you know, he'd write, let's say, an article about Zatanna, and then the next week he'd write something about, like, you know, the Golden Age Captain America, and the next week, you know, Donald Duck, just all over the map. But then over years, you know, built up this massive, you know, sort of, you know, reference of articles. But then they stopped being, like, published for a while. I'm like, oh, I wonder when he's going to update. But then there was a note that wound up he had a stroke.
Oh.
And yeah, and then passed away shortly thereafter. So Don Markstein's Toonipedia, I think, is still online, actually. I think it's been maintained, you know, by the fans, but there's no longer any updates or whatever. But yeah, he's got a letter in this old JLA mailroom.
Hmm.
Irene Vardanoff, also a regular from the day, just like I.H. Lilly, and you'll often see her letters. So much so that I remember people used to think she was fake. Like, so many of her letters were published, they're like, oh, you guys made her up. And it's just, you know, the DC editorial offices writing is her. It's not true.
I wonder if they did make people up.
Nah, I don't think so. You know, like, like I say, because some of these people, you know, have real world legacies. A lot of them came to work for DC. You know, it wouldn't make any sense to make up people. But anyway, all that is just ephemera. Let's continue on.
To the third page following.
To the third page following, yes. With Z as in Zatanna and 0 Hour, part 3. So, the narration, which is, you know, Zatanna's recollection, reads, from the solar boat, grim bowmen gripped and lifted me. Painted hands held me helpless as I was thrust into the glowing flame of the magic candle. I felt no heat and no discomfort, but the elemental inside me screamed in wild despair. Ah! Says Allura, you know, sort of appearing off to the side in, you know, a puff of smoke. It's Allura, says Batman, whom Zatanna spoke of, being driven out of her body. Then it was Allura that the forces of karma were fighting all the time, says Hawkman. But why? Look over here. Here comes another Allura, says Elongated Man. Why he would think that this girl's another Allura, given the fact that she looks nothing like her.
No clue.
Our Allura, by the way, is a sort of raven-haired girl in a dark dress, and the one coming running up is, you know, a blonde girl in a white dress. So sure enough, you know, says Zatanna, a second Allura, a twin, yet not a twin, hurled herself upon her alter ego.
Say counterpart.
Yes. Now, my evil other self, says blonde Allura, you are done with. Foolish sister, says Raven Allura, I hate you for the good that is in you. Once I defeat you, nothing on karma or earth can stop me. Score one for me, says Blondie, you know, grabbing her dark-haired sister by the forearm and giving her a sort of judo flip. But Allura the Evil was not so easily disposed of, says Zatanna, as we see the two fighting. We shall settle this, just you and I, says Batty. Our struggle will decide the utter helplessness of one or the other. By this time, you know, recounts Zatanna, you superheroes had freed me from the candle as we all watched with fascinated eyes. Can you help the good Allura, says Zatanna to Hawkman, as, you know, she's watching the struggle. No, Zatanna, says Hawkman, the victory, if there is to be a victory, must be achieved by the good Allura on her own. Why are they drawing these conclusions? I have no idea. So on and on, the battle rages until the evil elemental went down hard and cried out in her fury and dismay, I surrender, as, you know, good Allura has her arm pinned behind her back, you know, some wrestling finishing move there. Then remove the curse you put on Zatara long ago, says good Allura. Only I have the power to compel the undoing of that doom, and now I so command you. And so apparently that command does the trick, because bad Allura, you know, busting out the Ryman, says, curse I gave, I now take back. Curse once given, now shall lack. A victim, I swear by Biel. The curse is gone, be well. That barely rhymes.
Probably not going to work.
It's like, you know, proven love. But then at long last, you know, recounts Zatanna, I saw my father. For the first time in 20 long and lonely years, I saw his face before me. Yeah, okay, I see the look on your face.
Okay, so he's been gone for 20 years. Yeah. So how old is Zatanna?
Yeah, I don't think that he's been gone for 20 years. I think that is going to be quickly retconned. But, you know, for now, we'll just say, you know, gone for a period of time. Daddy, oh, daddy, says Zatanna, you know, running up. My child, my little girl, my Zatanna, says, you know, Zatara, stepping out of, you know, some sort of, you know, magical portal. How good it was, remembers Zatanna, to be wrapped in his sheltering arms. I'm afraid I cried a little, just as I'm doing now, telling this to you. Forgive me for sending those creatures at you, says Zatara, but it was the only way to defeat Allura. Her story came out, told by a man at peace with the world. Allura was my enemy, says Zatara. The story she told you about using my sword to help her was false. Actually, I fought and defeated her, only to be cursed by her while I imprisoned her in the sword of Paracelsus. As he casts a spell saying, Og, Otni, Odraws, you know, this is in a flashback, but what does that mean?
Go into sword,
you know. So yes, in flashback we see bad Allura saying, from hence you shall not see your kin, nor speak to her, let curse begin. No sight, no sound shall you then have, else curse shall take you to the grave.
Oh, that's evil.
she's got like John Ralphio rhymes. they don't quite work. So,
well, she's evil, yeah. You know.
So Zatara says, I no longer dared remain on earth, lest by chance I see you or you see me. Nor could I warn you directly or even indirectly. If I should, I would doom us both to death. I thought I was safe when I fled off earth to other realms, always searching for a way to remove the curse. And you see, you know, Zatara tripping the different dimensions, thinking, somewhere there's a good double of Allura. If I can find her, if she will agree to fight and overcome the evil Allura, the curse may be removed. Until at last, in this world of karma, I came upon the good Allura. As we say in flashback, you know, Zatara with Blondie. And she says, gladly I will fight the wicked Allura, but I cannot leave this land. Then I failed, says Zatara, for I dare not go to earth and bring the sword of the evil Allura in it to karma. Imagine then my surprise, he continues, when my magical familiars whispered to me that Allura had come to karma inside the body of my only daughter. Allura lured Zatanna here to find me, says Zatara to his familiars, knowing that it would kill us both. I must find a way to stop her. And so I fought you with my magic, hoping to exorcise Allura out of your body by bell, book, and candle. If I can make contact with Zatanna, you know, says Zatara in flashback, you know, looking at these items, with these three objects, I can compel Allura to leave Zatanna's body. I feared I would never succeed when you brought in the Justice League members, but when Batman deduced what was going on, I knew hope once more. Do you think Batman can convince the others, Allura? Asked Zatara. We can only hope. Then, he continues, I remember what the Justice League members intended. Og Arula, Og Dana Tefed, et Dexi Arula. Go ahead.
go, Allura, go and defeat the wicked Allura.
Oh yes, Zatara, and I shall fight as never before, she says. Green Lantern, you know, recounts Zatanna, you had listened, as fascinated as the rest of us, to my father's recital. Now you spoke. I know my power ring couldn't harm the parchment creatures because the papyrus, off which they came, was yellow with age, and my ring is powerless against yellow. But why did my ring not work sometimes and then work during our first fight? As Zatara explains, all light is of an energy frequency. The bonging of the bullman's horn bells was of such a frequency that it prevented certain light radiations from forming. Thinks Green Lantern. Color is merely a reflection of light off an object. When the bells vibrated at the same frequency as yellow, my ring didn't work. When the bells were silent, it did work. Now, I know that sounds like a bunch of nonsense or whatever, but that being said, it's used to actually really good effect in a later Green Lantern story. There is a race of aliens that are sightless. You know, they have no concept of light waves or whatever, so the whole concept of a Green Lantern doesn't mean anything to them, but they're still deputized as Green Lanterns, but for them, it's called the F-sharp bell.
Oh.
And their little, you know, and their little oath that they speak or whatever, you know, is all in terms of like, you know, sonics or whatever. It's quite neat, you know, so we're talking in terms of waveforms. So anyway, Zatanna wraps up. Now you know why I insisted on thanking you for helping me find my father. You know, she's telling the real Justice Leaguers. Well, that was certainly the most unusual case we were ever, I mean, never involved in, says Batman. Still, it was just as much a victory as any of our other real adventures, lies Green Lantern. I never met your dad, Zatanna, says Hawkman. Perhaps sometime. No time like the present, says Zatanna. Ratof Riapa.
Father, appear.
Yes. I'm glad to add my personal thanks to that of my daughter, says her father, appearing. Tell us, Zatara, what now of your plans, now that you and Zatanna have been reunited? Well, says Zatara, for a little while, we're just going to get acquainted, as he takes his daughter into a little embrace. Perhaps someday we shall all meet again. Who knows? So, happy ending to, you know, Zatanna's search. Let's see. On the facing page, we have a JLA Mailroom Extra. Let's just do a quick pass. In reference to Johnny Thunder, let's just skip over that. No names that I recognize. It looks like, a matter of fact, in that very first story that we ever did, you know, way back in episode one, there was a letter by Jerry Bales, and apparently in the interim, you know, I guess in those ensuing 5 years, he's written something called the Authoritative Index to All-Star Comics, and we're taking the liberty, says the editor, of reprinting the following brief descriptions of the JSA members. So yeah, here's a quick rundown, you know, according to Jerry Bales, of, you know, who these people are, you know, the Golden Age Adam, Batman, Black Canary, there you go, Dinah Drake, Florist, Judo, and a few gimmicks, Dr. Fate, we know him, let's see, Dr. Midnight, the old Flash, old Green Lantern, old Hawkman, Our Man, your least favorite, I think, right?
Yeah.
Johnny Thunder, his profession is listed as sailor and would-be detective.
Idiot.
Right, idiot with control of genie-like thunderbolt, says Jerry Bales. Mr. Terrific, we met. Red Tornado. We got to read some of her sometime. Sandman, who, what do you call him because of his gas mask?
Suckface, is that what I call him?
Spectre, who we're going to meet, Ghost, almost omnipotent.
Or just Jim.
Yeah. Starman, we saw in that team up with Black Canary. Wildcat, we're going to meet. We haven't read that second Black Canary story, but you're going to meet Wildcat soon. And then Wonder Woman. So, way to go, Jerry Bales. So like I say, that wraps up, you know, Zatanna's search. Or does it?
Probably not.
Right, well, because
you're going to put it like that.
Yeah, no, as I mentioned to you before, there is actually another story that sort of, you know, fits in with this tale, but that was written, you know, much, much later. So Zatanna, you know, after this point, you know, sort of became integrated into the DC universe. You know, she would appear in other people's stories, you know, occasionally pop up in Flash. Later in the 70s, she actually winds up joining the JLA. And, you know, and then throughout the 80s, you know, sort of becomes a main member. Before that era, there was a thing that DC Comics had late 70s, early 80s called DC Comics Digests. What they were, and you might remember this as a child, mostly I think with regard to Archie is where I used to see them. But like when you go to supermarkets and stuff, at the checkout line, there would be tiny little like cardboard covered comic books. Do you know what I'm saying? They're maybe the size of like, you know, 2 inches by 3 inches or whatever. Just like little handheld comic books. Does that ring a bell?
Not really. No,
it doesn't ring a bell. Well, I definitely remember seeing them, like I say, you know, in like supermarkets, you know, kind of like where they will sell like soap opera magazines nowadays, that type thing.
I know those.
Yeah. Well, back in the day, there used to be these, you know, tiny little digest comics. And mostly they would be reprints. They would, you know, take old comics and sort of, you know, resize them to this format or whatever and just, you know, sell them cheaply. But then occasionally there would be original material in them. And this particular story we're going to take a look at was an original story that appeared in one of these digests. Now, I don't own this. I only actually own one digest. It happens to be, of course, a Legion of Superheroes one.
Of course.
But I do have this story in the collected version of Zatanna's Search, you know, the trade paperback, which collects all those stories that we looked at over the past, you know, 2.5 episodes here. And then also that Batman story that was alluded to. If ever you feel the urge to read a story of The Outsider, you can go to this volume and check it out.
Thank you.
But in particular, like I say, I want to take a look at this story, which is a prequel to Zatanna's Search, and appeared in DC Blue Ribbon Digest number 5 from November of 1980. This is a story called The Secret Spell, and it was written by an author named Jerry Conway, who I've only mentioned one time on this show in relation to the fact that he was involved, I think, for a time with the All-Star Comics revival in the 70s. And then art by Romeo Tangal, who is a Filipino artist, I believe, and inking by Vince Coletta, who is actually held in sort of ill repute in the comics community. Vince Coletta is known for erasing a lot of pencilers' lines, like that he didn't feel like drawing, especially Jack Kirby. Like if you ever, Vince Coletta is not really a well-respected artist.
I guess not.
So yeah, so go ahead and take a look at this here. I have gone ahead and pulled up the cover here online, so let me just take a look at that real quick. And yeah, so the cover is just basically an action shot. You see Zatara and Zatanna actually are sort of flanking the whole thing, and then I guess all the heroes that are, you know, appearing in this little digest are jumping out of, you know, well, neither of their hats, because they're each wearing theirs, but, you know, a sort of Zatanna-styled top hat. You know, we see Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Green Lantern, The Flash. There's John Jones. That there is Wonder Girl. You haven't met her, but she's one of the Teen Titans. And then this guy, we're totally going to meet at some point, called the Demon. And apparently, you know, what this digest is around is the secret origins of superheroes. So I think, like I say, most of these were reprints, you know, with the exception of the one that we're looking at here tonight. So, we begin as headlights slice the darkness like demons' eyes. And we see, you know, this artwork is obviously, you know, more modern than what we've looked at in the Silver Age. This is, you know, the early 80s art. So, a car door opens, shuts with the sound slamming of a mausoleum gate, as we see, you know, two fishnetted legs stepping out of this car. Footsteps crunch on gravel. Clatter on wooden steps, creak across the porch as a breath is caught, exhaled slowly. A door whispers open, again a sharp breath, and this time it's followed by a voice, soft and worried. As we see, you know, this fishnetted woman now in the shadowed silhouette, looking in the door, calling, "Father?" "Oh, furies of magic," she says as the door opens and she sees, you know, the entire room just trashed. "Father, where are you?" The place is Shadowcrest, rambling home of Zatara the magician. So Zatanna's looking through the rubble, and she's like, "So that's why his phone's been out of order the past 2 days. The cord's ripped out of the wall, and the rest of this room looks as though it's been hit by a cyclone. None of the furniture's been touched, but every book, every paper's been scattered across the room. It's almost like one of the magic tricks in our show, where we send papers flying out of a bottle. But why would Father want to do this? What's this?" she says, you know, rummaging through the papers there. "This book was fluttering against my leg, its pages turning, but there's no breeze. Almost as though it wanted me to notice it." The book wanted her to notice it.
Mm-hmm. It's probably a magic book.
"Father's diary," she says, you know, holding aloft this. Indeed, it says, emblazoned on the front cover, "Diary of John Zatara." The name on it is Zatara. So this is the first time you've been exposed to his name, right? John.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, his first name. Yeah.
So this then is Zatara's daughter, neo-magician, known to the world as Zatanna. So by extension, I think you realize, but her name is Zatanna Zatara.
Uh-huh.
Zatara is her last name. So, the time, as the astute reader may have guessed, is several years past, before Zatanna's induction into the Justice League, which I just mentioned, before she adopted the costume she now wears, you know, which you haven't seen. So we see Zatanna there, you know, sort of, you know, propped up in the chair reading her father's diary as, you know, there's a book of black magic on the floor, you know, perhaps
the I Ching.
The I Ching, exactly. Yeah. So hold on, let me turn the page here. As, you know, the narration continues. In fact, it is before she's even met a superhero or she herself has used magical powers. Tonight is a crucial turning point in her life, though she does not yet know it. Tonight, she discovers part of her past. And she begins reading her father's diary. March 13th. The damage is done and cannot be undone. Thus, I must flee my home and pray Zatanna does not find me. I don't understand, thinks Zatanna. Why would father try to hide something from me? Something must be terribly wrong. But what? This is the last entry. But perhaps I can learn the answer by going back and reading the diary from the beginning. There's so much father never told me about himself. And she flips to the beginning of the book and it reads, my 15th birthday, and my mother gave me this diary. But the gift I truly cherish was a box of magician's illusions my grandfather Luigi gave me. I guess we go to the old country. Practice, Giovanni, and someday you too will be a great magician like your grandpapa. See, bambino? Yes, grandfather, I practice every day. Just for the benefit of our listeners, I'm Italian, so I get away with, you know, using stereotype accent here.
Okay, Thomas.
So he keeps his promise to his grandfather, you know, he writes, and I'm practicing daily, sometime for hours, as we see, you know, young, you know, Giovanni Zatara, you know, doing a little, you know, shell game trick. Time to go to bed sooner, darling, says his mother. I will, mama, I just have to practice the cups and the balls a little longer.
All right.
So January 4th, he writes in perfect English, no accent. So January 4th, today I did the illusion perfectly for the first time, as smoothly as grandfather ever did, and I know I found my vocation in life. September 10th, you know, as time's passed, you know, because now we see Zatara, you know, with that pencil-thin mustache, you know, that becomes his signature. It's his first professional engagement today, 6 months after his 19th birthday. I like to think I was a success. So we see him in some, like, you know, shady little stages. You know, the crowd's booing, bring on the comics, where are the girls? Get this stiff off the stage.
Bring on the comics.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't think they meant comedians.
So we see Zatara doing the, you know, the classic saw the girl in half trick, but, you know, the audience not having any of this. But the truth is, you know, as Zatara writes, the audience was distinctly unimpressed. I can't blame them. Something seemed to be missing from the act, as, you know, they're well-armed, you know, throwing eggs and tomatoes. I always wondered, like, why people would bring vegetables to a show.
Yeah.
So time goes on, and October 1st, you know, writes Zatara, traveling the Midwest vaudeville circuit, and at last I think I understand what's wrong. I know the illusions, you know, thinks Zatara, but I lack the style. I'm still just a kid playing magician, and it shows. If I'm to be a success, I have to believe in myself and project that confidence like my grandfather. I must be larger than life. November 7th, in New York for a fourth bill one-week run at the Paramount, purchased several new books at the old bookstore. See, you know, Zatara, arms filled with books, you know, coming out. And he finds one book in particular quite fascinating. A reproduction of the notebooks of Leonardo da Vinci, written entirely in reverse. Grandfather used to say that we were related to him somehow. Leonardo wanted to protect his secrets. I can actually read the words, even though they're backwards. Translating from Italian, it reads, Et mara jam eb detonor 081 Sirged. Okay, go ahead, baby.
The arm may be rotated. Oh, that's a number.
Yeah, 180.
180 degrees.
And as indeed the sort of dress dummy there behind him, you know, begins rotating its arm as Zatara swings out, what in Houdini's name? The mannequin's arm moving in a half circle. But that's just what I read out from Leonardo's notes in reverse. The arm may be rotated 180 degrees. It's as though the mannequin were obeying a command. Although I'm not quite sure how that works because he says translating from Italian, it reads and then he says it backwards in English. Like, how would you translate backwards Italian and read it in backward English? That doesn't make any sense.
He's a really smart man.
I guess. But he's still freaked out by the mannequin spinning his arm. He's like, but will it stop on command? Mannequin, be still, be still. Nothing. How can... Wait, the original command was in reverse. What if I... Nikonom pots, he says, which means
pots.
What?
Mannequin, stop.
Mannequin, stop. And indeed, thwang, the arm goes down. It worked. I didn't have time to consider what I'd learned. It seemed too incredible to believe. and as my assistant and I prepared to go on stage, I was still brooding over what seemed like a dream. Was it magic? Thinks Zatara, you know, as he's getting dressed ready to go on stage. Real magic? Is that even possible? So I put my wonderings aside and turned my attention to performance. As I had learned much in the past 2 months, I had developed a presence for the stage and a persona. I am Zatara, he says, you know, in a powerful voice. Tonight, you will witness mysteries. You will doubt your senses, perhaps your very sanity. Some among you may call it magic. But only Zatara will know the real from the unreal. Behold, as the mysteries begin, a lovely young woman, transformed in the blink of an eye, in the pulse of a heartbeat, from a beauty into a beast. As, you know, he tosses a cloak over, you know, his assistant there in a, you know, sort of little cage. And as he pulls it off, you know, roar, she's suddenly a tiger. Style. That was the key, continues Zatara. The audience would accept any illusion if the magician presented it and himself with style. Though I did not know it at the moment, fate was about to present me with an even greater opportunity to prove myself. Dr. Fate?
Mm-hmm.
In the form of a smoldering cinder from a smoking cigar. As you see, you know, a stagehand, you know, not paying attention as his, you know, little ember hits the curtain. As Zatara recounts, velvet is an excellent tinder, and a velvet curtain is like a mat of dry straw, only waiting for a match to burst it into flame. As indeed, you know, the flames start creeping up the curtain. My act was drawing to its close when the fire broke out in all its fury, a fire most terrible of any disaster to befall a theater. Oh, Lord, says Zatara, swinging around. I acted without thinking, the events in my dressing room still fresh in my mind. Eref Narut, which means what?
Fire, turn.
That's right, fire, turn. So we turn, also the page, and Derps on Retrof, Sliapfo Danas. Go ahead.
Spread no further, pails of sand.
Ival Skoo.
Leave hooks.
Isaud et Simolf.
Douse the flames.
Douse the flames. So, yes, we see, you know, Zatara directing this little backward magic spell toward, you know, buckets of sand hanging there on the wall. You know, so emergency, you know, turn of the century fire kit as they go and they dump themselves onto the flame. The audience must have thought it was part of my act because they began applauding as though they'd never applauded before. And I knew in that moment that my life would never again be the same. Somehow I had gained true magic, perhaps inherited from some remote ancestor. As, you know, we flash back to Zatara thinking, the rest of the diary explained how Father learned to use his newly discovered magical powers to battle crime while still appearing as Zatara the Magician. It's unbelievable, she says, a side of him I never knew. I wonder, she says, you know, looking at the fireplace, and then, you know, it, with in the spark of inspiration, she says, Erif Tethigil sit her tray.
Fire, light, this hearth. So these are the first words that she's ever uttered backward?
Yes, right. This is the origin of Zatara. Exactly. She thinks, good heavens, I can do it too. I never suspected, but now that I know there's something unique about my father and me, something that separates us from other magicians, I understand so much. Especially, she says, you know, with firm resolve, that my father's in danger and needs me. I'll search for him and find him if it takes me from one end of the earth to the other. I love him and I won't let him down. Stenu ikat em ot ataraz.
Winds, take me to Zatara.
Winds, take me to Zatara. As a wind rises and in a gust of smoke, she's gone. But not yet to her father, for his magic has seen to that. But she has begun a great quest that will take her around the globe, and she will meet many of the world's greatest heroes. But in the end, father and daughter will be reunited, and for Zatara, the true adventure of life will then begin. As, you know, we see the final panel there from our JLA story, you know, Zatara in her father's arms as, you know, Batman, Elongated Man, Hawkman, Atom, and Green Lantern look on approvingly. So, yeah, so one fell story. We learn how both Zatara and Zatara came into being.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, as I say, we conclude our very first story arc. You know, congratulations, we made it. You know, three episodes, and you stuck with it. So,
yay!
Good job. So I'm curious then, you know, given the fact that you you did stick with it, and thus far, you know, I've had, you know, four live birds walking away. You know, you've judged each one positively.
Uh-oh.
You know, we have maybe a story and a half, but we'll call it two stories here tonight. You know, so I'm curious about your judgment about the epic conclusion. The first one we looked at tonight was... the awkwardly titled, you know, Z as in Zatanna and Zero Hour from JLA.
Mm-hmm.
That's another, you know, Gardner Foxtail.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of...
Foxtail.
That's good. What did you think about the, you know, the drawing together all these disparate elements and then, you know, also the one that doesn't fit, you know, the Batman, just throwing that in for a cherry on top.
Yeah, that was a really long sidebar
there. Sorry. But...
So the story arc itself was really well developed. I think it came to a satisfying conclusion. And I think I alluded to this before, but I felt like I really got to know Zatanna.
In the story or over the arc, you said?
Over the arc.
Yeah, yeah.
The character is just really well detailed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I can see that she's kind of plucky.
Plucky?
Yeah, I'd say plucky. Unlike how she was in the animated series that we watched earlier, where she was a little bit more than that. She was almost a little aggressive and cocky.
Yeah, although, you know, like in that, so just as a quick sidebar before you continue on that story, I think one of the things that we neglected to say on this for people who haven't seen that episode is that Batman the Animated Series episode never makes it actually clear if she can do real magic. Everything we see is basically a stage magician thing, you know, for your benefit in Justice League Unlimited. You know, when she does come back in team, she can do it. But if you only ever watch that episode, you'd be like, oh, she's just like a regular, you know, illusionist, David Copperfield type.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, back to, you know, Z for Zero Hour, whatever.
Yeah. We read the stories back to back, but... the timeline's actually drawn out longer than that.
Yeah, it goes by like 3 years, really.
Yeah, that long?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. When like each time that we see her, she's growing in her powers and her confidence as well.
Mm-hmm.
She starts by having the guts enough to try a spell, but she kind of screws it up and needs help to get out of it.
Well, the Hawkman one, right? Yeah, yeah.
And Hawk Girl, who's not mentioned later.
Oh, that's right. She wasn't in the JLA story.
Yeah.
I noticed. You noticed, of course. Yeah.
And then by the end of the arc, she's taking charge and she's leading the team. Or at least their magic subtle bodies.
Yeah, that's, you know, I noticed that actually. In retrospect, I see what you're saying. But I first noticed that really kind of late in the game was in the Elongated Man story where, you know, he's like, I'll come with you. And she's like, no, you can't go. You're just a regular person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's actually what clued me in. And I was like, wait, hold on a second. Hawkman and Hawk Girl had to put her back together.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, like, here she is, like, declining... you know, help from a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's like, I got this, you stay back. So.
Yeah, from an arc, it actually is a true arc. You really do see the growth of her from immaturity to, you know, full power, I guess.
Yeah, so overall, I would say it's good, you know, and that little birdie lives.
Okay, good. So for the arc, the bird lay, but you're saying specifically then for the JLA story, that bird lives also.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you have any specific, you know, remarks on that story? Like, it was weird to me because that story was almost entirely in flashback, right? Like, she appears and she's like, let me tell you this story about what happened, you know?
Okay, so, yeah, the concept of that was a little strange, but they make it work. And sometimes, like, because you get so drawn into the story, sometimes you lose track that Zatanna's actually, like, telling them a story,
mm-hmm.
you know, like they're not actually doing it right then.
Yeah.
You know, and a little bizarre, but it still works.
And the funny thing, like now that you're saying this, I'm even thinking that I didn't notice at the time, but there was actually a story within a story because in Zatanna's flashback, when she rescues Zatara, he begins telling her a story. So it's nested one degree further as well.
Yep.
All right, so cool. So that was the end of, you know, the arc proper. But then we jumped forward, you know, to, you know, the prequel, you know, sort of ironically, you know, she talks backwards. And so by going forward, we then looked backward at the very beginning of the tale, you know, blah, blah, blah.
And that's confusing.
Right. But so, yeah, the secret spell from, you know, DC Blue Ribbon Digest. You know, what did you think about this little one-off here?
So I think that Jerry is trying to invoke a little Gardner Fox with his Da Vinci reference.
Oh, Jerry Conway?
Yeah, I think he went into like Gardner Fox's attic library.
Honestly, it's probably an intended homage. You know, the Gardner Fox by that point, 1980, probably had been away from DC Comics I think he left like 67, 68. So yeah, we're talking maybe like, you know, 13, 14 years. So absolutely, Jerry Conway, I'm sure, was giving a little nod to, you know, his, one of his, you know,
mentors
maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So yeah, as a prequel, it was good. It answered some questions, but it left one really big one.
What's that?
So sure, there's something that separates Zatanna and Zatara from other magicians, but what is it?
You picked up on that. That actually is a. Oh my gosh, dude, that's so funny you should say that because now I'm putting a couple pieces together. There actually is something that separates Zatanna and Zatara and other people from other even magicians or whatever. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm pretty sure that it's Jerry Conway who introduces that concept in Justice League later in the 80s, like, sort of mid 80s. I won't be giving anything away. Like, by the time we get to this, it'll be, like years down the road or whatever, if we even get to that point. But long story short, they're actually genetically different. They are a race called the Homo Magi. Basically, they're not Homo sapiens. They actually are, some sort of like half magically infused, sub
On their DNA.
species on their DNA. Yeah. I think there might be like elements of fairy or something, in their, long past or something. So yeah, good catch. And like I say, I'm pretty sure it was Jay Conway who introduced that. So yeah, maybe he was laying the
Well, yeah,
seeds,
the timing's right
a
there.
full, 5 years earlier. So cool.
Yeah, so I mean, it makes me want to hear more of her story and more of like these magi that you're
And we're gonna revisit the character Zatanna. I don't know when. I think her next appearance, like I say, is probably gonna be in Flash. So it's on the schedule or whatever. But trust me, we got a
A ways
lot
to
of other
go.
characters to cover before we get back to Zatanna.
Okay. Well, as far as this story goes, this is another good one. So we have several live birds in a row
Wow,
now.
six for six. Awesome. That buoys my heart. I gotta recalculate our average here and see how we wound up.
There may have been an upswing.
Yeah. So, but going back to an earlier thing you said when we were talking about the JLA story, you were talking about, interesting sidebars. Well, I am glad that you found it interesting, and you said it was also long. Well, it's going to be a little bit longer than that. Just for the benefit of our audience, we mentioned a few episodes ago that I had gone away for work, for a couple of weeks or whatever. Well, coming up, Melanie is actually going to be going away for a little bit of work as well. So in the interest of buffering against that, we still want to release weekly or whatever. I think what we're going to do is this coming week we are going to forego any sort of story reviews, and instead, I think back to back, Mel, we're going to record a couple audio commentaries for something that we talked about. The sidebar we talked about, Batmania. Well, I took a look at the old Wikipedia, episode list for the Batman series from 1966, and there are not many, magic related characters. Like mostly it was like Joker, Riddler, whatever.
Right.
But there is one villain that he faced, a female magician whose first name begins with Z, ends in A, and there's a two-part episode, focused around that. So if you're amenable, I think, like I said, to buffer you being away, I'd like to sit down with you and, watch some episodes of the old Batman show, and, we'll do a review for our next episode.
Yeah, that sounds
That
appropriate. I
sounds
think we should.
appropriate. Yeah. So any guesses as to her name? I give you a hint, it's not Zatanna.
Oh, then no.
No? Well, it'll be a surprise then.
Okay.
All right. So, and it may be a surprise for, our listeners, or, if you're familiar with that show, you might already, know who this, this somewhat obscure villain is. But in any case, that's what is up for our next episode. But we want to thank you all for joining us for this episode. We hope you all had a good time, and we hope to see you here next time on the Parliament of Rooks podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
Game of life to win. can recall a time when I wasn't ashamed to reach out to a friend. Now I think I've got a lot more than just my toys to lend. Now there's more to do than watch my sailboat glide. But every day can be a magic carpet ride. A little bit of courage is all we lack. So catch me if you can, I'm going.
Questions, comments, corrections, and suggestions may be sent to tporpodcast@gmail.com.